lost myself on a cool, damp night.
Welcome back to What's at Risk. I'm Mike Christian.
Gave myself in that misty light. Was hypnotized by strange delight.
In recent decades, we've seen a disturbing trend ripple around the world. People are getting fatter, and as a consequence, their lives are getting shorter. In 2006, there were more than 1.6 billion overweight people in the world, and the World Health Organization projected that those numbers would grow by 40% in 2016.
Ooh, a little hungry one, open up a package of my bologna, spread it on the mustard now, show me how, spread it on a little of this bologna, never gonna stop, eat it up, such a tasty snack, I always eat too much, and throw up, but I'll still be back for my, yai, yai, woo! My bologna, my bologna, hey!
With more than 225 million overweight people, the United States has the largest number of obese individuals in the world. It also exports its unhealthy habits to countries all over the globe. The passion for fast food that started in America is now a worldwide phenomenon. According to the National Center for Health Statistics, nearly two-thirds of the U.S. population qualifies as overweight. Half of that group, or nearly one-third of the population as a whole, has been categorized as obese, which is defined as having a body mass index over 30, or more than 30 pounds over a healthy body weight.
You know, well, I'm a chicken fried. A cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and the radio.
In the United States alone, obesity costs $117 billion a year, a figure that seems to get bigger every day. From 1997 to 1999, hospital costs for obese children and adolescents topped $127 million. Just 20 years earlier, those costs were only $35 million. Carrying extra weight can increase a person's risk for a wide range of conditions: hypertension, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and some types of cancer, to name just a few. The saddest part of all of that is that most of the illnesses associated with obesity are 100% preventable. Of course, it's not just what we Americans eat that keep thickening our waistline. It's also our misconceptions about eating in general, from how we prepare our meals to when and where we eat them.
Now that whaling has returned to the West Coast, we're faced with one of the most complicated issues of our time: how best to cook it. Historically, whale tends to be barbecued whole, but it's also marvelous with a marsala sauce and a side of couscous. And let's not forget pesto whale tortellini, which goes wonderfully with orca orzo and spotted owl souffle. You can find all these recipes and more in my new book, The Whale Watcher's Diet. Order now and receive my secret recipe for braised baby beluga. Of course, eating whale meat does present us with one of the most complicated moral dilemmas of our time. Since a whale isn't really a fish at all and is actually a highly intelligent mammal, red wine or white?
With his new book, The Five-Factor World Diet, Harley Pasternak returns with a revolutionary new weight loss plan to give you the body you always wanted. After years of traveling the globe with his large roster of celebrities, including Alicia Keys, Lady Gaga, Jessica Simpson, Katy Perry, Kanye West, and Hilary Duff, Pasternak made a remarkable discovery. The farther he travels from the U.S., the easier it is to find foods that are both nourishing and slimming for his clients. Now, he reveals the weight loss secrets from the world's 10 healthiest countries and adapts more than 120 recipes for 5 weeks of menu recommendations to his popular five-factor diet technique.
We're speaking with Harley Pasternak, the author of The Five-Factor World Diet. I noticed you didn't include the U.S. In the World Diet's top 10 countries. Why is that?
Well, at number 59, I would say the U.S. is a far cry from the top 10.
Yeah, I'd say too. So why do we lag so far behind in life expectancy?
That's a good question. I think because we don't live as long, because we are obese. Number one cause of death here in the United States now are all obesity-related deaths, heart disease, diabetes-related issues from amputation and kidney failure. We are too fat. We are the fattest country in the world. We have the most obese people in the world. We have 230 million overweight Americans in a country of 300 million. We got problems.
Yeah, that's a sad statement. How did you arrive at your top 10 list of healthy country diets?
Great question. I travel to about 30 countries a year in the last 2 years and got a sense as to there was a big difference from the way these people were living, the way they looked. There wasn't a lot of people overweight. So I started looking at statistics from the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and I looked at the list of the countries with the longest lifespans of the world. And then I looked at the list of countries with the lowest obesity rates in the world. I took out confounding factors like socialized medicine, famine, war, disease, and came out with the list of the 10.
And is there a commonality from a diet perspective on this top 10 list?
There are some commonalities from country to country. You know, in the past, there have been some books written about the French diet or the Chinese diet. The problem with trying to say, okay, the Chinese people do this, and that's why they're so healthy, so that's what we should do in the U.S., is there are so many differences to China and the U.S. culturally, socially. Just because it works in China doesn't mean it's going to work here in the U.S. So it was important that I did a cross-section of the 10 healthiest countries. What are the commonalities? What overlaps are there? At least 5 of the 10 healthiest countries consume lots of tea, consume lots of fish, consume lots of soy. At least 5 of the countries consume lots of dairy, lots of whole grains, beans. So I focused on the ingredients that overlap to the most number of countries, the eating techniques. And that's another big thing. It's not just what you eat. It's how you eat it. And a lot of the countries overlap the ceremony of eating, the self-control, the small portions, the multiple courses, eating with chopsticks as opposed to eating with a knife and a fork like we do here.
Now, in your analysis, do you think that diet is the single largest factor contributing to longevity?
I think it's the easiest component to change and to modify. I think that genetics is a big thing, but we have no control over our genetics, and there's no such thing as an American genetic for the most part. We are a country of immigrants. We all come from somewhere else around the world, whether we did, our parents, our grandparents, or our great-great-grandparents. Our genes are not originally American. They come from somewhere else, so it's not a genetic thing. Diet doesn't take any more time of the day to just change, say, I'm going to eat this instead of that. It doesn't take any effort or time. Exercise takes a little bit of more effort, but when I talk about exercise, I'm not saying you need to spend all day in a gym. In the other books, I talked about 25-minute five-factor workouts that are so simple. In this book, I'm talking about going for a walk.
So what's the basis of the five-factor diet?
The five-factor diet is based on eating 5 times a day: breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, and dinner. Scientifically, you know, founded in the research of Dr. Jenkins and Dr. Walliver at University of Toronto, that showed that people who graze as opposed to gorge have more stable blood sugar levels, insulin levels, are less prone to overeat, more control over what they eat, how much they eat, a lot healthier. And I wanted to focus on what to eat rather than what not to eat. So there's no calorie counting, there's no carb cutting, there's no food weighing, nothing that would typically resemble a diet. Focus on eating 5 simple criteria per meal: low-fat protein, healthy carbohydrate, fiber, healthy fat, and a sugar-free beverage. Created a few hundred recipes that take no more than 5 minutes to make, or 5 key ingredients.
You talked about the preferred methods of eating. What are some of the preferred cooking techniques?
I loved learning how to make ceviche in Spain. You know, I love going to a restaurant and ordering ceviche, but the idea of cooking fish without cooking fish was pretty daunting to me until I saw how it was made. It's probably 90 seconds to make ceviche. You literally take raw fish, you put in some lime juice, you put some seasoning in, and you put it in the fridge, and you wait a few hours, take it out, and you've got cooked fish that's delicious and tender, and you haven't deep fried it, and you haven't added any unhealthy fats or sugars. It's great. steaming, very heavily used in Japan and in China. They steam foods. In France, they braise foods. You don't see a lot of deep-fried foods in France. So there's a lot of healthy cooking techniques around the world.
Your book has a lot of great recipes. I happened to page through it yesterday. Do you have a couple of favorites?
The cucumber salad in Japan, the salmon teriyaki in Japan, the pastas in Italy. You know, when I started eating, I used to be a big oatmeal fan, and I still love a bowl of oatmeal in the morning. But I started making congee, and we here in the U.S. think of, oh, rice for breakfast, that's so strange. Two-thirds of the world thinks that we're strange for having oats for breakfast, because they make it the same way we make oatmeal. They make congee, which is out of rice. And so there's a great recipe in there for a hot bowl of congee in the morning, which is rice porridge with pear. Delicious. In Sweden, I have the Swedish muesli. I like that, too, for breakfast.
You speak of congee now, and there are a few other examples of foods that I wouldn't readily find in the grocery store. How do we find some of these fresh and organic foods that maybe are a little more obscure than we normally are used to?
Everything in the book, for the most part, is available at every grocery store, at least the most important ones. And when I say congee, it's rice,
right?
And rice is available everywhere. When I talk about soy, you don't have to buy some soybeans and ferment them and make natto. Get some soy milk. Have a soy joy bar. When I talk about fish, if you don't happen to be comfortable grilling fish or steaming fish, grab a can of salmon or can of tuna. Dairy, so simple. Go to the grocery store and get some milk. Get some skim milk or some fat-free or low-fat yogurt. I love Greek-style yogurt. It's got triple the protein, like Faye yogurt or Trader Joe's yogurt. And beans, so simple. Don't be intimidated about having to soak beans. Buy canned beans. You can make soups, dips, put them in salads. So easy. All the ingredients are available to us here in the U.S.
How about when you're eating out? Is it harder to maintain this diet?
I think quite often because you don't know exactly what's in every dish. You don't know how much oil they use. But if you are eating the authentic foods, they're so easy to... You know what the healthy ingredients are. You know what the healthy dishes are from reading the book. You can go with confidence to an Italian restaurant, a Japanese restaurant, a Chinese restaurant, and know what to order and feel that you're doing something that's healthy.
So, Harley, you've worked with a lot of Hollywood stars like Jessica Simpson and Hilary Duff and Alicia Keys on their diet and exercise. How'd that all evolve for you?
I grew up in Toronto, Canada, spent one too many years in university, was working towards a doctorate in nutritional science and exercise science, and I was actually a scientist for the Department of National Defense examining the effects of nutrition on exercise. And that's not a very high-paying job. So... I had a personal training business that was catering to the film industry that would come to Canada. Started on a film called Angel Eyes with Jim Caviezel and Jennifer Lopez many years ago.
Sure.
Then started working on some other really bad movies like Wrong Turn and Cold Creek Manor. And eventually got the call from Halle Berry and Robert Downey Jr. to train them on Gothica. And then right after that worked with LL Cool J and Ray Liotta. And then Halle asked me to train her for Catwoman and then Rachel Weisz on Constantine and Mila Jovovich for Resident Evil and Orlando Bloom on Elizabethtown. And then I went on Oprah and everything changed.
Yeah, that's awesome. And now you've parlayed this into a wider audience with these books, which is great.
Exactly.
Well, Harley, any final tips for our listeners?
Be open-minded and understand that the five-factor world diet is really an easy lifestyle to help you lose weight and keep weight off. And if you want to know more, you can go to fivefactorworlddiet.com.
That's great. We've been speaking with Harley Pasternak, the author of The Five Factor World Diet. Thanks a lot.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. It's a hard lesson to learn, not me. Oh, it had to be a hard lesson to learn.
When Cleveland Plain Dealer writer Regina Brett turned 50, she wrote a column on the 50 lessons life taught her. She reflected on all she had learned through becoming a single parent, looking for love in all the wrong places, working on her relationship with God, battling cancer, and making peace with a difficult childhood. It became one of the most popular columns ever published in the newspaper. And since then, the 50 lessons have been emailed to hundreds of thousands of people. In God Never Blinks, Regina has taken her 50 lessons and expanded them into deeply personal essays. From Don't Take Yourself Too Seriously, Nobody Else Does, to All That Truly Matters in the End Is That You Love. This handbook for life includes the most important lessons life has taught Regina, the most vital lessons she would pass along to her future grandchildren, lessons that sum up what matters most, that prove life is good no matter what it hands you. Regina Brett has been a newspaper columnist for 14 years, eight of them for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, where her column appears three times a week. She's won the Headliner Award, and in 2008 and 2009 was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in Commentary. She hosts a weekly call-in show on WCPN, Cleveland's NPR affiliate.
Regina Brett, the author of God Never Blinks, 50 Lessons for Life's Little Detours. So what experiences in your life led you to write this book?
You know, I wrote this book because I was kind of lost on a lot of detours, and I figure a lot of people are kind of on that same path. First was probably grew up in a big family, 11 children, kind of felt lost in the shuffle there. And then I just kind of wandered around trying to find, you know, Mr. Right, settling for Mr. Right now, ended up getting pregnant at 21. I was a single mom for 18 years. And got cancer at 41. So just a lot of the bumpy roads of life that everybody faces. I felt like taught me a lot on the path, and I wanted to share those lessons.
Right. So 50 lessons. I'm certainly they were inspired by experiences in your life, but did you learn some of them from others along the way?
Oh, yeah. You know, in the book, some of the chapters are about different people that really taught me through what they went through. One of it was a priest here in Cleveland who had a tragedy happen at his parish, and he was pretty much feeling hopeless. And it's kind of the story of how he found faith again. So a lot of them are kind of short stories, too.
Now, you have a lesson, when in doubt, just take the next right step. So how do you know what the next right step is?
Well, you know, I think most people know, like, the next small right step. It's usually the giant leap we don't know. You know, the example I give, when I wanted to go back to college, I thought, I got to know which college to go to. It's like, well, maybe I just got to get the course catalog, or maybe I need to go on the Internet and look at one college. I think if you break it down into, like, one tiny step, we usually know what that is. Even if somebody's in a relationship, they don't know, should I stay, should I go? Well, maybe the next step isn't ending it or proposing. Maybe it's like, let me go out on one more date, or let me talk to my best friend for an hour. You know, like, they're just small steps we can take.
So just take each small step, and then the ultimate path
reveals itself. Yeah. You know, people want to lose 20 pounds. They think, I'm going to lose it in a month. Well, you probably gained it in a year, so it might take a year. So the small step is, when I have lunch today, I'll get the salad instead of the French fries.
Now, when did you start to explore your feelings through writing? Did you do journals, or were you a major, an English major? How did that all come about?
It probably all started when I was a little kid, and I read the book Harriet the Spy. And I got my first little diary with the key, you know, that you thought you could lock your brothers out of it, and they got the toothpick and opened it. But I loved writing just as soon as I had that first diary. It felt like I had a best friend. There was somebody I could talk to.
So you have one of the lessons, make peace with your past so it doesn't screw up the present. I like that one. How did that one come about?
You know, I think we all have a lot of baggage, and some of us drive U-Haul trucks full of stuff that's happened to us. And if we don't unpack it, we're going to carry it into every relationship, you know, at work, with whoever we're dating, all that. And for me, you know, having been one of 11, there wasn't a lot of individual one-on-one time, and so I kind of grew up hungry for that. And, you know, I had to deal with, like, what the leftovers of my own childhood, so I wouldn't take them into every relationship and hope that person would love me the way I wished my mom or dad would have. You know, I think a lot of us still carry that around.
Now, we've just gone through a very difficult economic time. Do some of your lessons relate to financial issues?
I think they do. You know, One that I think does is, if you don't ask, you don't get. I think too often we say, well, there are no jobs out there, and we just give up, or this person won't hire me, so we don't ask. How I got my job at the Plain Dealer as a columnist, I was working in another newspaper, and I thought, I'm just going to call and ask for the job. I mean, there wasn't any posting. I had no idea if there was an opening. And one day I thought, I'm going to call the editor and say, hey, let's have breakfast or coffee or lunch or something. And I sat down and proposed hiring me, and he did. So sometimes I think we don't ask because we're afraid, or we give up and think it's hopeless. So somebody who's unemployed, who's maybe working a job, they're underemployed, you know, give it a shot. Speak up and ask.
There's another lesson. The passage of time heals almost everything. And I noticed in going through the book, you have several lessons about the perspective of time and change. Can you expand on those a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I think that so much of healing in life does take time. And I think we want it instant, especially in our culture. Everything's kind of instant gratification. And I had a struggle trying to get to a good place with my dad in my life. You know, he was working all the time and working really hard, putting roofs on for a living, fixing furnaces, and you know, he was the kind of dad who, when he pulled in the driveway, we had 11 kids, and if one person did something, everybody paid for it. And there were wonderful things about it, but there were bumpy things. And so I think that it took a long time to have a relationship with him and really understanding that my dad didn't say the words, I love you, but he would say, check the oil, you know, and he'd check the tires on the car, make sure they're inflated. And he did all those things that dads do that you don't think of at the time as saying, I love you, but then when you're older, you look back and say, wow, it was there. So I think time does give you a different perspective. You kind of see through the eyes of gratitude as time goes on.
Now, a lot of baby boomers have turned or are turning 50. Do you have some advice for them?
Yeah, celebrate the hell out of it. You know,
right.
So many people doing the black balloons and the... I've had friends who, like, they don't even tell me it's their birthday because they're turning 50. Like, it's some tragedy. You know, after getting cancer at 41, happy birthday is a victory song. Like, celebrate big. It, really, we all have an expiration date. I just read a quote by George Bernard Shaw who said, you know, the odds of dying, you know, one out of one people die.
Right.
It's going to happen. So,
pretty good odds, yeah.
Celebrate what you have.
Exactly. Here with Regina Brett, the author of God Never Blinks, 50 Lessons for Life's Little Detours. Now, how has your faith in God infused your life and these lessons?
You know, for me, there's never been a doubt that God exists. You know, I've had my, you know, ups and downs with God. You know, one of the chapters is, it's okay to get angry at God. And I think it is like a relationship. It's not something that I came to believe. I think I kind of was born with some kind of belief. You know, we were heavy Catholic. We had a picture of the Pope in the dining room next to JFK in the Last Supper, 3-foot-high crucifix over the TV. My niece says it looks like a church exploded in the house. And so, like, religion was always there, but I think you come to grow into a relationship with God. And like I said, I had a lot of ups and downs, and when I got cancer, I'm like, oh, come on, God. Haven't we been through enough here? But, you know, I even look back and say, well, there were a lot of gifts out of having cancer. So if I had to have it, thank goodness the grace of God was there to fix it.
It's all in the recovery, right?
I think it is.
So what are your favorite lesson or lessons in the book?
You know, I think my favorite one is 45, and that's the best is yet to come. And in that lesson, I tell a story of my mom and how she turned 75 a few years ago, and she keeps saying she doesn't want to live past 80. She's done. She's raised 11 kids. And I figured I better get to know this woman. She's turning 75. And so for her 75th birthday, I sat down and wrote 75 things I loved about my mom. And I had to look back in the past and really see her in through different eyes. And so for her birthday, I gave her this little scroll of the 75 things, and then we spent all day shopping. And after the day was over, she looked at me and said, this is the best birthday I ever had in my life. I thought, wow, my mom waited to have this wonderful birthday, you know? 75 was her best one, so it's never too late.
So are there 50 more lessons coming down the road anytime soon?
You know, I don't know if there's 50, but there's a lot more, and people keep sharing theirs, and I have a website, and I invite people to share their own lessons. It's GodNeverBlinks.com, and, you know, I think we all have lessons we've learned from that can help the next person that hits that speed bump.
Regina, any final words for the listeners?
No, I think, you know, one last one. This one lesson I love, 21, is burn the candles, use the nice sheets, wear the fancy lingerie. You know, every day is special enough. I think too often, Mike, we save the good things for you know, Thanksgiving we'll use the china. I'll wear the pearls maybe when my kids get married someday, instead of on a Friday night just because I feel like it. You know, live today as deeply and as joyfully as you can, because none of us are guaranteed the next day.
Regina Brett, the author of God Never Blinks, thank you so much for your time.
That's it for this week's edition of What's at Risk. I'd like to thank our special guest tonight, Supanova Sloan, author of The Remedy, Harley Pasternak, author of The Five-Factor World Diet, and Regina Brett, author of God Never Blinks. I'd like to thank our producer, Johnny Pfister of Ringo Studio, and our associate producer, Scott Cooper. We're interested in what you're thinking about. Send us an email at whatsatrisk@risk-strategies.com and let us know what's on your mind.
Podcasts of What's at Risk are available at the WBZ.com on the air drop-down menu by clicking on What's at Risk. You've been listening to What's at Risk, heard every Saturday night on WBZ News Radio 1030 and streaming on WBZ.com.
Run the risk or you'll never.
When your company is considering risk management and consultative support for your business insurance, make the right choice and call Risk Strategies Company. With offices in Massachusetts, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Irvine, California, Chicago, and Providence, Risk Strategies Company takes a team approach to protecting your assets efficiently and cost-effectively. By offering a wide range of services and capabilities, Risk Strategies Company brings the highest level of expertise to clients in all areas of insurance and risk management, delivering insurance solutions, extensive carrier relationships and marketing expertise, claim advocacy, loss control safety management, health and welfare coverage, life and executive compensation plans, personal insurance lines, and surety. For the most comprehensive risk management and insurance coverage for your business, depend on Risk Strategies Company. Learn more at risk-strategies.com or call 617-330-5700. 617-330-5700.